Hey, welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Pints and Pairings.
And you are?
Hey, I'm Curtis Taylor, also known as Hop Heads Ed.
Excellent. I'm Jason Hendrick, a.k.a. The Hungry Man from Everybody's Hungry. This is part three for the day.
It is. So we've kind of pushed on through part three. This is actually four, isn't it?
I will limit my sound effects today.
For this episode. Opener, light, amber. We're on number four.
We are.
And four is going to be a doozy. Jason doesn't know this yet, but I have two beers lined up for this one.
Got them. One, two.
Not one, but two English pale ales.
So that wolf in the weeds got you.
The wolf in the weeds. No, we'll be doing, actually, I have two ESBs lined up for us. All so right. we are delving into BJCP category number 8. I have not said it in a while, but if you want to know more about a beer judge certification program or beer styles, you can go to bjcp.org.
That's where we get all our information. Curtis, you've actually been through the BJCP program.
I have. I have been a lucky...
And kind of like NASCAR, when you say BJCP program, isn't it like the Beer Judges Certification Program?
Yeah, so...
The National Association of Stock Car Association Racing.
I'm glad that you pointed out the redundancy. I appreciate that. I will remember that. And as always, it is not toast before you put it in the toaster. It is bread.
Exactly.
Isn't that right? So from the last episode. So make sure you go and check out any of our episodes. We are working our way through the 23 style guidelines. We know for sure that we're going to break up the IPAs, so we know we're going to have
each
at
time
least
we talk about it. We end up with a few more shows, but we're going through all 23 styles. There's going to be some subcategories. More importantly, we're tasting those 23 styles as we go, so we're giving you live notes and live feedback, and we're talking about food that comes along with it that we think tastes good with the pairing, or maybe we should experiment with. Maybe we haven't done it yet, and we want to see what it'll taste like.
That's right. So if you've got any additions
or subtractions,
revisions maybe that we should make, let us know. And you can leave those comments if you go to hopheadshead.com, click on the Pints and Pairings link, and then under each one of those episodes, just leave a note in the comment section. Sure. Or you can send an email directly to me at curtis@hopheadshead.com.
Or jason@everybodyshungry.org.
Whichever one you feel more comfortable.
And you can find the podcast through iTunes as well. So if you're listening live right now or you came across this podcast from a friend, go to iTunes and subscribe. You'll get all the past shows.
Yeah, and please like our show. Support it, whatever it is. Whatever iTunes. Pretend you like it. Okay, so we've got English Pale Ales, and there are three of them. We're going to have a hard time here in the U.S., being able to find two of these. So we have a standard ordinary bitter, and then we have a special best premium bitter. Now, we can get a couple of the special bests, but the standard ordinary bitter, those are going to be things that you are just going to have to go on a trip.
Yeah, you're going to have to go across the pond.
Right. So there is Fuller's Chiswick bitter and that I've seen around. There's Young's bitter. There's a Green King IPA. But for the most part...
It's like the names, the Chiswick...
Chiswick, that is certainly an English sort of name. There's also Tetley's.
I like Tetley's, actually. I've had them.
And the only problem with those come in anywhere from like 3.2 to 3.8%. And so they have to be consumed almost as soon as they're brewed. And so you're talking beers that sit on a boat and
we've talked about the transportation time in the past being an issue.
Are beat up on their way to the U.S. markets. And so... You know, you may find one that's in good shape, and if you do, right on. You know, way to go. But I wouldn't necessarily – I would spend my money on it just to see if I could find one that was good. I haven't had any of those, so I would really like to be able to taste those.
Now, packaging, too, a lot of times they come in a can, right?
Some of these are – Fuller's is going to be in a bottle. Young's is going to be in a bottle. Green King is actually made in the U.S., so you'll be able to find that, but Green King might even come in a green bottle. So some of these are not packaged the best for a long transit over the Atlantic.
And that's really what I was trying to get back to is, you know, not only is it on a vessel for however many days it takes to sail across or to boat across, But if it's in a packaging that's exposed to the elements and the sun, there's a certain level of deterioration and breakdown as well that you're battling.
Right. So some of the going into the special best premium bitters, there's Fuller's London Pride, which you should be able to find just about any one of your beer markets. Young's Special, which is around, I'm trying to see if there's anything else that I see. Rogue Younger, so something out of Rogue. Goose Island Honkers Ale is considered a best bitter. That's kind of surprising to me. I don't know if I would have considered that. But then you go to ESB, and this is where the market kind of blows open. So you've got, you know, Fuller's ESB. You've got Young's Ramrods, Samuel Smith's, Bass. We've got one behind that we'll be tasting is from Anderson Valley.
And we just recently had a really quality Anderson Valley at our cheese event with their Belgian-inspired double.
Yeah, they do a lot of, I mean, this one is kind of, I shouldn't say, they do a lot of different styles, and they go from the English pale ales to experimental kinds of things as well. So there's a whole lot, Alaskan ESBs, and, you know, I could go on and on and on, but I won't.
I'd rather we pour.
I know. You know what? I'll give you a beer here. Here you go. Jason's going to pour the Bunt ESB. We'll do these.
And I prefer not to use my teeth. Let me get that opener.
Okay, there you go. You don't want to use your teeth. So let's see. As we look at the specs on these, you know, you're talking beers anywhere from 3.2% to 6.2%. And Jason, I'm wondering if you can guess which ones are the 3.2s and which ones are the 6%ers.
Oh, it's a tough one. I feel like we've had this question in the past, but probably anything inspired by an American brewer has got a higher alcohol percentage.
Generally that's going to push it up. One of the things I think that's interesting about ESBs is the ESB stands for extra special bitter. And one of the things initially when I was a brand new craft beer drinker is I shied away from it just because it had the word bitter in it.
I can totally relate to that. There's times where bitter pushed me away from the case because you think aspirin, you think something that's going to really pucker your mouth or give like a fuzzy feeling on your tongue. But most of the time, I'm wrong.
Right. Well, most of the time. Well, so one of the things, the reason it's called an extra special bitter is beers just generally when you go to the pub are called a bitter. You order it by, I want a bitter. And then there was, which meant pale ales. And then if you wanted a porter, you order a porter. If you wanted a stout, you order a stout. So it was more of a way of just kind of naming it. But the ESBs are the bitters that come up on the top end of the alcohol scale.
Okay.
So they have a higher alcohol content, which means that they used more malt in it. So there's more malt flavors, more malty aromas coming out of these. And in fact, and for my personal kinds of palate observations, is they are not any more bitter. In fact, they have a better malt profile and a more rounded malt flavor than some of them that have less malt and a more pronounced bitterness.
I'm excited about this beer too, and I poured in front of the camera, so you hopefully got some of the good color. It's kind of a pale orange. It's got a nice color to it. In the nose, it has a fruitiness. It's got almost like a nectarine kind of aspect for me. Just kind of sitting down in there that I wasn't expecting.
So hop aroma, moderately high to moderately low. So, I mean, there's a range on these. This one, for me, has a lower hop aroma to it. Now, Boont or Anderson Valley may be using some American hopping or American hops varieties in it.
Sure.
To give you some of that citric kind of components in it.
And we've talked about in the past how you accomplish aroma with hops. And there's multiple stages in the boil and the mash process where you can add hops to get different aspects, right? So early on in the boil is going to give us more bitterness from the hop. But later in the boil, almost near the end, is going to give you more of the aroma component.
Right. So an aroma hop has been in there the least amount of time in the boil, and or it was what's called dry hopped, which were the hops were put into the beer after it was fermented so that none of the hop aromas can escape during fermentation.
Sure.
So it can get kind of tricky, but just in general, the later the hops are put in, the more aroma that you're going to get. the earlier the hops are put into the boil, the more bitterness you're going to get out of it.
And we're definitely getting some bitterness in this one, but going back to my fruit component, I'm getting some stone fruit aspects, like some dried apricot and even some peach near the stone itself. So when you bite into a fresh stone fruit, you've got that outer fuzzy flesh and you got a sweetness in the meatiness of the fruit itself. But when you get closer towards the stone, you end up getting a little bit of that bitterness and a little bit of the tartness is too strong of a word, but you know, it's not as pronounced of a sugary sweetness, but you still get essence of the fruit. And that's what I'm pulling out of this beer.
Well, and I think this is,
and even a little woodsiness, like a little, light nuttiness.
I think this is a good example of an American ESB too, because it is a little hoppier than the Fuller's, and it's a little hoppier than even the Red Hook ESB, which are generally a lot maltier beers. I don't necessarily get the fruity aspect of it in the hops. When it comes to the hops, I get more of a woodsy sort of flavor, and I don't know if we're talking about the same kinds of aspects. I don't eat a lot of stone fruit, so I don't have those kinds of sense memories with it, but there's a lot of sweetness in it, a caramely sweetness underneath. Sure. Everything that lays it out. And if it didn't have this assertive kind of hopping profile, this beer would probably be too sweet to drink.
Now, I'm curious, because maybe my mind's just playing tricks on me. I'm getting a little obscure, but I feel like I almost get a little bit of a really light milk chocolate in the nose.
I think for me, it's there's this caramel flavor or caramel aroma, but there's also a little bit of nuttiness underneath. And so those two combining might be giving, could possibly give off that perception. I don't necessarily get the chocolatey bit, but certainly some nuttiness underneath. And then the herbal kind of hop bitterness that accompanies
it. Yeah, I agree with the herbal for sure. Thinking through some of the foods too, I immediately think of something salty and almost meaty, like bacon or a pancetta. Something that's going to contrast a little bit with the sweetness that we're getting, even though it is, you know, we have varying sweetnesses between the two of us. Salty combined with that, I think, is a good pairing and a classic pairing. Salty and sweet from candy to cooking is class, you know, it's just timeless. Mm-hmm. And this is the way, when we talk about contrasting notes, complementary notes, and resonating tones, I think the saltiness is the contrasting that we need.
Well, and just even looking at traditional food pairings, one of the things that I've always said about pale ales, whether they're English or they're American pale ales, is they're the workhorses of food pairings. There really isn't anything you could do pair with a pale ale that it isn't going to taste good together. And so if you look at traditional pairings for an English pale ale, fish and chips, you know, these fried food kinds of things.
Something that's rich and fatty.
Right. And so you've got this bitterness that'll help kind of break that up. There's and especially in this one, you're looking at around 6% alcohol. So you've got enough alcohol to kind of help break down the fatty coating, you know, that's coating your palate, the sensations that are coating your palate. So it can break that down and wash it away as well.
Yeah. No, we always come back to traditional pairings in some aspect of every show. And, you know, the fish and chips, the meat pies, the kind of standard bangers and mash, anything that's got that rich and creaminess, or like you said, some of the fatty components that create the mouthfeel, seem to make sense with this beer.
Mm-hmm. Some other ones, just because it can go in a lot of different directions. You've got pork and you know, think of some traditional kinds of English fare, meat pies, those kinds of things, where this beer would help break down those, cleanse your palate, and you would be ready to take another bite as well. On the other side, you know, looking at some cheeses, you look for cheeses that have a nutty kind of flavor, and I've got Asiago, some Gouda, even some Havarti, those kinds of things where you've got cheeses that have a similar sort of nutty flavor underlying in them.
Okay. You know, I try to think about different cuisines. I don't want to go to the same cuisine every show. And I could actually see this with a little bit of an Italian flair, too. We were talking almost like a primaveras, and you could even get away with some Alfredos because there's enough of a spice to me. And like you said, a little bit of that alcohol heat that could cut through that creamy, rich fat and sauce, the buttery aspect. When you're talking about how an Alfredo is made, it's largely butter and cream, and you got that velvety texture. I think this would go well, or even something into like a ratatouille, where you've got, you know, a strong herbaceous vegetable component, but you've got the tang and the spiciness of the tomato sauce that it's cooked down into.
Well, I think too that that points out, that suggestion points to something that's real subtle in this, though, is that after everything is washed away, there is a pepper kind of spice that just kind of lingers there. And pulling out that pepper spice and pairing that, resonating that, you know, with a meal, if you have a little bit of pepper in the meal, or even just using that spice or that bitterness to help contrast what it is that you've got. And certainly in an Alfredo, which is a lot of cream and heavy sauces, but I also like pepper in my Alfredo. So
I most definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just kicking up an Alfredo a little bit. I don't, a true kind of traditional Alfredo is going to be very buttery, velvety, and creamy, but to me, somewhat bland. And when you add a little bit of pepper, it heightens that experience and it really raises those flavors up.
Right. And one of the other things, I mean, just going off of the Italian versions of it, beer is challenging, I should say, to pair with tomato sauces. They're, you know, we can do the asparagus conundrum. I don't know if you've ever heard of
this. I'm not, but I'm intrigued.
So I mean, try and find a wine that pairs with asparagus. You're not going to do it. Find a beer that pairs with asparagus and you can do it. I mean, you're talking about all these herbal flavors that are coming out of asparagus with the hops or the funk yeasts that are used. You can find plenty of beers that pair well.
Dankness is actually sought after by a lot of beer enthusiasts, depending on the style. You know, we're talking about, you know, getting off track a little bit, but when we're looking at Belgians and especially some of the more unique or wild yeast fermentations, you're going to get that wet, danky, vegetable-y kind of component that just screams asparagus.
Right. So this is a nice lead into Italian dishes, cuisines with a white sauce is looking at English pale ales. And it was something that I hadn't thought about until now. I mean, I've done plenty of pairings of brown ales and some other things with tomato sauces because of the roasty and all those kinds of things, flavor components. But finding a nice white sauce complement beer pairing is a challenging thing to do. And you pull it out right there. And this is, you know, it here from Jason on Pints and Pairings. And so when you wow your friends by pairing a beer with your Alfredo sauce, you know who to thank for that.
And I think one of the hurdles that we often hit, not just you and me, but just as people, when we're talking about pairing food and beverage, it's very easy and simplistic in going with a complementary pairing. You know, looking at two items that really work well together in a similar manner. But the contrasting notes, I think, are something that adds interest and adds a uniqueness to your pairings too, where people go, oh, I wouldn't expect these to go together. They have two different styles of flavor components, but yet it still works together. And they're resonating too. Sometimes when you're dealing with a recipe, you add an ingredient just to heighten another ingredient, just to make something else stand out and showcase. The beer can be that, you know, although you don't want to wash away the beer, you don't want to mask it with whatever you're eating. There can be an opportunity sometimes to play with a beer and a food pairing that, again, one is simply there to help raise up the other.
Right. And so we talk about the complementary, the contrasting, and the resonating. But when you can do all three of those together and create a complex pairing, which is what you're talking about, where you've got these flavors that build a base layer. Then you've got the flavors that help pull each other up, you know, elevate one or the other. And then you have these ones that are contrasting against each other. Those are the most exciting beer pairings that you know, any kind of food pairing, food and drink pairing.
Those are typically the ones where your guests are sitting in their chair looking at each other without any verbal communication, but you know they're going, wow, yeah. How do they do that? What am I tasting right now?
Definitely. So I want to just to contrast here a little bit between an American ESB, which we have poured out of a bottle, forest carbonated. It was crisp and clear. Certainly, it was brilliantly clear.
Yeah.
And
no denying that.
But it had the carbonation, carbonic bite behind it. It was what I would consider a quintessential beer. I mean, this had carbonation coming out all over the place, and that helped scrub the palate and everything. So I'm going to open up an Old Speckled Hen right here. This is, what is this, a 12-ounce can, something like that, 14.9.
What's your theory as to why they put quotations around Old Speckled Hen?
Good question.
Is there a story back behind that somehow?
There must be something. I've never actually noticed that before.
I'm going to try to look that up because it's probably like some farmer who had a friend who was a brewer, and the brewer always saw the farmer with the hen, and it was uniquely colored. Who knows? I want to find that out.
One of the neat things about this beer, though, is that, one, it's in a can. You can see that. It's coming from England, so there was no light struck. You can also get this in a bottle, but guess what? The bottle is clear, and you don't want that one. If you can pick between the two, get this one. Also, this can has a widget in it, and the widget has some nitrogen, so it's going to pour this really creamy...
Widget is such a universal term, too. It applies to so many different things.
So the widget is basically this little plastic ball inside that is pressurized, and as soon as I open it, that pressure, the pressure inside the ball is greater than the outside, and it blows it open, and then it throws all this nitrogen, which gives it this really smooth and creamy pour.
Here comes the sound. Holy mackerel, that one had like an echo and a resonance and a...
And as I pour it, look, I'm giving it a good hard pour.
That's a lot of head coming out of there.
Because as it settles out, you can see as it's pouring.
And these are some of my favorite beers, though, when we do this, and we've done this before, when we tried this show the first time.
when we tried the last show the first time.
Yeah, exactly.
Or the first show of the last time.
Boddington's does this as well. You get that three layers of coloration. You've got your, you know, top of the head is nice and white and foamy and cream. And then you got the settling layer where the bubbles are rising to the top. And it creates that unique kind of separation in color. And then you get the beer itself. So it almost looks like a Thai tea.
And the reason that the widget is in here as well is to give you the sense of a cask conditioned ale. So cask conditioned ales are poured at a much lighter carbonation level. The flavors stick to your mouth, and then you can really pull out the nuanced malt flavors.
Sure.
Okay, because there's no hops and there isn't any carbonation, that's really kind of cleansing your palate. One thing that I love about these is when you pour them is just that thick, creamy head on the top.
It's like whipped cream or ice cream. It's awesome. And what I like about it, too, is I think that thick, creamy head concentrates the aroma to a certain degree. It kind of traps some of the aroma. So I'm getting a really nice, strong, yeasty, biscuity, almost gingerbread kind of note in my nose. Followed by a little bit of a floral sweetness.
Mm-hmm. And I've had nitrogen homebrew that I've had nitrogen. And sometimes I don't even do the nitrogen. I just do CO2 and I do it through a diffuser tap. And this head is good enough to eat and drink. Whereas if you pour a highly carbonated beer, there's a lot of just empty space in that head. But in these things, they're so thick and dense that you could actually just scoop that up and eat it, and it would taste just like the beer.
Fantastic.
So the differences between the two, Jason, you've taken a sip already. Your initial I don't know, response between the two.
One of the most obvious differences for me is that kind of creaminess. There is almost a lactose kind of note and mouthfeel. Mm-hmm. So both on the flavor and on just the palate feel itself. But also there's a stronger residual sweetness. Whereas the American style had a little more of that peppery spiciness in the back of your throat and the finish, especially when you took a good breath after your swallow. This is more toffee kind of notes and a little sweeter with, again, that kind of lactose creaminess on the palate.
Right. So think milk stout meets a pale ale, and then you get a good idea of what a nitrogen beer is. Now, one of the things that, and this would be something to talk about on the stout side as well once we get to stouts, but there are plenty of different cans that have the widgets in it. And it's interesting to me that those cans, I can't think of an American beer that has a widget in it. They're all UK beers. It's Guinness, it's Old Speckled Hen, there's Boddington's, there's Beamish, there's maybe does Young's Double Chocolate Stout.
Does Magners come that way as well?
I'm not sure, but what's interesting to me is that these English beer makers are packaging their beers with these to give this creamy kind of mouthfeel, where the only way you're going to get this in the U.S. from any one of your favorite breweries is by going to their tap room, and generally they do a special night where they pour some of these beers on nitrogen so that you can taste the difference between it. And I encourage you to do that too. If you see that your brewery is pouring nitrogen beers or cask conditioned ales, go do it, because it's a totally different beer from what you are used to buying.
And it's an experience you gotta try. What's cool about this too is there's a little bit of a vanilla aspect. The longer it sits, I'm getting some vanilla as it starts to warm up just a little bit. But also almost an almondy kind of tone that's coming out.
I definitely get the almond, and that goes back to the nutty kinds of flavors and what are you going to pair it with. But this one is in just because of the way that it was packaged with the nitrogen, it is a much sweeter beer than the first beer, than the Anderson Valley one. So when we were talking about desserts earlier, this one is almost, you're not going to get any palate cleansing qualities out of this.
This isn't washing anything away.
No, but you're going to get something that's resonating. So if you've got anything that has a slight almond flavor in it, you can bet that this beer is going to help accentuate that as you're as the course goes through.
Right now, I'm thinking contrasting notes. I would like to have this with something that a peppery or spicy, rich kind of lamb stew. Something where the sweetness is battling to a certain degree with, the opposite spectrum with spice, with gaminess, and with a richness that I think, would play almost like little war games in your mouth. Mm-hmm. So you're saying, oh, that tastes great. There's a sweetness. Oh, there's a spiciness. Oh, but the spiciness and the sweetness, they're going well together. They're kind of dancing, but yet you can keep them distinguished between each other.
I like that. I like that.
It's not often that we come to a silence after a discussion.
You caught me off guard because I was expecting you to go just to kind of keep going. But I was only because I was off thinking about a lamb stew and the sweetness and everything else that you just said. I won't try to repeat it.
Well, the other thing, there's a place up in Goleta that I really like called Simply Pies. And, we've talked in the past time and time again about traditional pairings, taking the origin of the beer and looking at the typical culinary fare of that area. I, going more into the complimentary side now, could see this going well with a really creamy chicken pot pie. You get some of those crisp pea and carrot and onion vegetables in there. You get that buttery, velvety creaminess of the sauce and a rich, buttery flakiness of the crust. And it's going to resonate well, and it's going to complement well with the nutty sweetness and the creaminess of this beer.
Yeah, I could see that this resonating really well with the crust. Other things too, look at fish and chips again, pork and lamb. You talked about the lamb, you've got some sweetness. A light barbecue, even a sweeter barbecue sauce that was, working with the resonating sweetness. Pizza,
Now, I'm not entirely confident in this one. I'd have to try it because I haven't done it yet. But we debated about the aspect of fish and seafood and the amber hybrid and now the ESB and the English pale ale styles. But what if we went with a rich lobster tail? Something that has a natural sweetness to it. And it's, I love our California lobsters out here, but it's got to be from Maine. It's got to be from the East Coast where the waters are really cold and there's a natural sweetness already in the meat. Out here in California, you're not getting the same level of sweetness. So it's got to be from the East Coast, but a nice, basic poached lobster tail, a little bit of drawn butter. I think, again, trying to play with the resonation and the complementary aspects, that's going to go well. And I'm going to have to go down and get some lobster and try it out.
That's, yeah, I'm speechless again after that one because I'm just thinking of lobster and butter.
I don't know when the last time I had lobster was, and that's kind of sad because I used to eat lobster a lot. When I was growing up, my mom used to take me to Red Lobster after each grade, kind of the graduation dinner, and I always ordered the combination platter that had a little lobster tail on it. And I've broken out of that habit, unfortunately. I need to get back in the habit. Lobster tail, a minimum one time a year.
Aren't you done graduating grades?
No, you're never done totally graduating. As you grow older, they may not be defined grades, but you're still graduating.
It's still a celebration.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely.
Well, if you haven't had the pleasure of taking part of a Maine lobster kind of party,
like where a boil?
You just go and you get them right there. I was in Maine and not too far from Portland, so we went in, we got all the lobsters, they were still alive, dropped them in the pot. Everything was as good as it could ever be when it comes to lobster.
I'm digging it. And you know, we're on the seafood kick right now. We've got our friends at Jolly Oyster, they do the clams too. There's a way we can incorporate this beer into a clam dish. I know it is. There's going to be a saltiness that's going to come out of those clams. We put them all in a big pot with some onions and probably some bell peppers and a few, you know, drops of lemon juice, whatever. I'm not sure what my final ingredients would be, but I know we can get this beer into a clam dish and have it work well.
Right. And one of the things that when you think of mussels or clams, I generally go towards Belgian wits and some other beers of that nature that are traditionally steamed, you know, mussels and clams that are steamed in it. I don't know why you couldn't steam with this or poach it with this as well.
That creamy sweetness is gonna do right by those shellfish. Yep. I don't see how it could go wrong. We need to get out there and spend a day at the park just seeing what we can come up with.
Bonus episode right there.
I like it. We can do a remote. If you guys tune in, you never know when we're going to do a bonus remote somewhere.
That sounds like a good idea. All right. Let's call it good on this one.
This is a good day.
Before we
still got bread to eat, we got lunch to go to, but we have beer to finish.
Right, and I'm not pouring this one out. I'm gonna finish this one up here, so it'll be a good lunch. It'll be a tasty lunch for sure. So thanks for listening to Pints and Pairings, and I am Curtis Taylor, also known as Hoffitz.
I'm Jason Hendrick, aka the Hungry Man from Everybody's Hungry. And Curtis, before we break out, I'm thinking maybe in an episode or two coming up, we should do a little
splash out all over.
Yeah, we splashed it all over ourselves. But no, we should maybe leak the beers we're going to be trying ahead of time and get our listeners to try them with us during the show.
I think that's a great idea.
So let's do it.
So yeah. there is a list. One of the very first posts on Pints and Pairings, there is a list of the beers that are scheduled to go. So we know the styles and we know what's coming up. But we will, because you don't know exactly when we're broadcasting. But a week from today, we'll be hitting the next three, which is going to be, we just finished English Pale Ale, so we've got IPAs and stouts and porters coming up. So
yeah.
So we've got some tasty beers coming up. So take a look at hopheadshead.com and click the Pints and Pairings button.
Don't forget to subscribe at iTunes.
Right, and click the star, you know, rate us, whatever it is that you do there, you know, share the love.
Show the love, and we'll show it back. All right. Curtis Taylor, Hophead Said, I'm Jason Hendrick, a.k.a. The Hungry Man. Thanks for joining us at Pints and Pairings. And what's our moniker?
As always, we would love to remind you to eat, drink, and be happy.
We'll see you at the next pour.
Cheers.